I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we'll hear two viewpoints about vaccines and vaccine safety. Measles outbreaks in several states, including Washington, have brought a new public focus to the concept of vaccination. In Vancouver, at least 73 people have reported contracting the measles this year. In neighboring Oregon, health officials attribute 4 cases of the measles to the outbreak in Washington's Clark County. Around the nation, federal health officials report more than 550 measles cases, the second largest outbreak in 20 years. Vancouver Republican State Representative Paul Harris has introduced a bill that would eliminate the personal and philosophical exemption allowed parents to enroll their children in school without the required measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. That's one of many illnesses for which children are vaccinated. That bill was approved by the State House on a 57-40 vote. That came after a strong show of opposition from parents at a legislative committee and attempts by several legislators, including those from Spokane Valley's 4th Legislative District, to change the bill. That bill has also been approved by a Senate committee, but there's no guarantee it will move further in the process. A few weeks ago, a listener contacted us to complain that parents who have questions about the safety and frequency of vaccines are portrayed as crazy. In fact, she says, they're simply worried that the health effects of the ingredients in the vaccines cause more problems than the illnesses they're designed to prevent. She said their point of view is often ignored and pointed to a February panel discussion on the On Point radio program that we carry on KSSC that included only pro-vaccination views. She asked if we would do a program that includes their views, and I agreed. So we called Del Bigtree, the founder and CEO of the Informed Consent Action Network. He's challenged the federal government's system of evaluating and approving vaccines. In the second half of this podcast, we'll get a different view from Kayla DeBusk from the Immunization Assessment and Promotion Program at the Spokane Regional Health District. Del Bigtree is a journalist who once served as a producer on the Dr. Phil and the Doctor's syndicated TV programs. And now he hosts an internet talk show called The High Wire. Last December, he wrote an 80-plus page letter to the Department of Health and Human Services to point out what he thinks are deficiencies in the way the government evaluates and approves vaccines.
Well, essentially, this all started when Bobby Kennedy met with Donald Trump right after he'd been elected and was asked to head a vaccine safety commission. And Bobby Kennedy stood in front of the cameras there at Trump Towers and said, I've been asked to head the vaccine safety commission. And then a few hours later, Trump's administration sort of backtracked from that and said that wasn't exactly what was happening. But out of that came a meeting at the National Institute of Health that Donald Trump set up for Bobby to discuss vaccine safety. And Bobby Kennedy and I and many lawyers, scientists, and doctors got together to work on a PowerPoint to discuss what we thought were issues and failures and conflicts of interest inside of our health agencies and our regulatory agencies. And we took that to the National Institute of Health, where there's about 10 people at the table, the top heads of our infectious disease and vaccine programs, including Tony Fauci, head of infectious disease, and Francis Collins, head of the National Institute of Health. And so we presented what were the issues we saw in the vaccine program. And the simplest ones and the most basic were, we said we can't find a single double-blind inert placebo study of any of the vaccines we're giving to our children. Are they are these trials, these placebo studies, which, by the way, is the gold standard that is used to approve all pharmaceutical products, drugs that we give to people. Essentially, you give one group the trial drug and the other group gets a pill that's painted and looks like the drug, or if it's an injection, they get a saline injection. And then you follow the health outcomes of those two groups. Nobody knows who got what, not even the scientists involved. That's why it's called double blind. And we follow that for often 5 years, sometimes 10 years, to see if the health outcomes are the same. And if at the end, when they unmask it, everybody has the same rates of cancer in both groups or the same rates of diabetes or autoimmune disease, then we say that, you know, it stood up against the placebo, it has a safety profile, therefore it's safe, it can be put on the market. We couldn't find this study being done for any of the childhood vaccines. And so we asked, you know, Francis Collins and Tony Fauci, are these studies being done, but they're not being listed on clinicaltrials.gov, where you find all of the government trials or the manufacturer's websites or the inserts. We couldn't find it anywhere. And at first, someone said, well, they're done very, very early in earlier phases of trials, phase one and phase two. You're only looking at phase three. And we said, okay, fine. We're at the National Institute of Health. Certainly you have those records. Could you bring us those trials? We'd like to look at it. We're just consumer advocates making sure that safety is being taken care of for our children. And then there was this pause, and then somebody said, okay, we don't do placebo studies on vaccines because it would be unethical. And then suddenly everyone at the table sort of agreed that that was going to be their statement. It's unethical to do a safety study, meaning to have a group like, and so I think a good example would be like Gardasil, HPV. They'll try to say that if there's already a vaccine in existence, it would be wrong to have a new vaccine have to have a placebo group because we have this life-saving product and it should be available and you shouldn't be in a placebo group. But HPV was a brand new, the Gardasil vaccine was a brand new vaccine that was going to go after cervical cancer. Why would that not be tested against a saline placebo group? So these were the questions we had, and they ended up saying, no, we've never done them. And so that begins a problem. So now what we're saying is we've never done a safety study to improve the safety of the 16 vaccines we give our children in 72 doses. So then you have to look at the surveillance system. And our question to the National Institute of Health is, since you've decided it's ethical to give an untested product to millions of children in America, what is your surveillance system to capture the potential adverse events and if maybe there's something deficient or wrong in the vaccine, something we've done wrong? How will we know? And so when we look at that system, the system that's in place is called VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. This is where if you take your child in for a vaccine and they end up having seizures, you know, a couple of hours later and you tell your doctor, it says right on the insert of the vaccine, any side effects, any problematic side effects, immediately report them to VAERS. And so your doctor is supposed to report to this VAERS system that there's seizures. Now, whether or not it's directly linked, we don't know, but we're collecting the data so that good science can be done to research it and see if there is some causal relationship, or maybe there's brain swelling and there's an encephalopathy event for, you know, autism obviously is a big buzzword. You know, how do we know that the autism is or is not being caused by the vaccine? So it's all captured by VAERS. So here's what's alarming. In 2018, and the numbers are still coming in, but we're currently at 60,000 reported vaccine injuries for 2018 alone. Over 400 deaths, I think it's around 412 reported deaths from vaccines that have been reported. And oftentimes 5 to 10,000 emergency room visits are being reported. In 2016, there was over 10,000 emergency room visits, 432 deaths reported. Like 1,500 permanent injuries. So when we look at VAERS, this is the capture system. So when we're told vaccine injury is one in a million, it actually flies in the face of the only data system that's really capturing this. But it gets more alarming than that because internal reviews of VAERS, both by congressional committees and more recently by Harvard Medical School, CDC paid $1 million to have the Harvard Medical School investigate the VAERS system and see how efficient it was and see if there was a way that they could automate it so that it would be more efficient. And they came back and said that it appears that VAERS is only capturing less than 1% of the total amount of injuries that are happening. Now, that right there should be the biggest headline in the world, because if we're already at 60,000 reported injuries, and there's the potential that that might only be 1%, if you do the math, that means there's potentially 6 million injuries happening in America alone from vaccines. If there's 400 reported deaths, does that mean there's actually 40,000 deaths that are not being reported? This is where this debate needs to be happening. And instead, we're getting this bumper sticker slogan that vaccines are safe and effective without really discussing the actual data we can see or the lack of decent data, which I think VAERS represents. And in that study, Harvard was asked, could you automate it? And so they attempted to automate it using their own HMO, the Harvard Pilgrim system, and they were successful. And when they had the data being automatically uploaded as soon as people made reports instead of waiting for the doctor to do it, or that as soon as it was typed in inside the hospital or the office, it just immediately went up to VAERS if there was any sort of thing that would fit in the category of injury. They found that the injuries were roughly 10% of the vaccines going out, that 10% of them were having adverse events. And when you read that report, Harvard Medical School says, we told the CDC this, we provided our data, and they stopped answering our phone calls. They stopped responding to emails, and they just essentially never, ever responded to finishing up the study that the CDC had paid $1 million for. And I think you can sort of guess that CDC didn't like what they were hearing. They didn't like that when you automated the system, you weren't at 1 in 1 million injuries, you were at 1 in 10. And that is what I'm focused on. That's where I've been investigating safety now for 3 years. Bobby Kennedy and I work closely together, and we've been filing lawsuits based on not following through on mandated legal responsibilities of Health and Human Services. We won a lawsuit against Health and Human Services. We won a lawsuit against the National Institute of Health. We just settled a case with the FDA. When we're being told that this is misinformation, you should try winning a lawsuit using misinformation against government agencies. I don't think that would be very easy.
So you also make the case that vaccines are not tested long enough for adverse reactions, which you call the vaccination injuries, some tested for only a few days. Why is that an issue?
Well, think about it. I mean, Grandpa's Viagra went through an almost 10-year safety review, where some were getting the drug and others were getting sugar pills to see if it caused harm. This is a product that's given to perfectly healthy babies and children. They aren't sick. When we do safety trials of a cancer drug, oftentimes those go on for years. And we're watching a lot of discussions about should we relax the protection of trial drugs. If someone is dying of cancer or dying of AIDS, shouldn't they be allowed to just say, I'd like to get this drug, whether or not it's been proven to be safe yet? What difference does it really make? So we adhere to, it would be unethical to give someone dying a drug. They will be in a placebo group. There will be people dying of cancer that will be in a placebo group and not know it, and will die because they never got the drug if it proved to be a great drug. So you see the ethics there. They are willing to accept that we are not letting you know whether or not we're going to save you. Vaccines go into perfectly healthy children. So these children are not dying of anything. They're not at risk of anything. And so you would imagine that that would be an even more rigorous safety trial, perhaps for longer periods of time, but especially when the increasing issue in America is autoimmune disease. We have increased our illness, and this is the major part of it. I wouldn't be here if we had the healthiest kids in the world, or we had the healthiest generation of children in America, but our stats say anything but. We have gone from 12.8% chronic illness in our children when they received 10 vaccines in the 1980s to now that we're receiving 72 vaccines. That's gone from 12.8% chronic illness to 54% of America's children have a chronic illness that will last their lives. And in that is autoimmune disease and neurological disorders. And so in order to see if vaccines are the cause, since we certainly can see that there's an anecdotal evidence, there's a correlation that the rise in vaccines goes with the rise in the...
Oh, you're breaking up, Dell.
Autoimmune disease is the crisis of our time, which it is, then shouldn't we be looking closest at the one product that's designed to alter your immune system for life? That's what a vaccine is doing. It's tricking your immune system into thinking it's had a disease without actually going through the symptoms of the disease. Well, we're not just tricking that immune system one time or 10 times or 20 times or 50 times. 72 times now, we're tricking a baby and a child's immune system, and we're shocked that that immune system is now confused as attacking cells in our own body, our pancreas in terms of diabetes, or the myelin sheath and issues like multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis. All of these things at a massive increase. So in order to see autoimmune disease, we know that it takes 2, 3, sometimes 4 years for those issues to appear that are once underlying to actually surface that we can recognize them medically. So you would want in a study to see if vaccines are causing autoimmune disease, since there's a logical train of thought that they could be. You would want those safety studies to be lasting at least 3 to 5 years so you could see if there actually is an increase in autoimmune disease amongst the group that gets the trial vaccine versus those that get the placebo. But instead, what we see is that there is only trials, for instance, the hepatitis B vaccine we give to a day one old baby. Hello. Welcome to the world. You're gasping for your first breaths, and here comes your first sexually transmitted disease. Hepatitis B is just like AIDS. You were really only going to come in contact with it if you're sharing needles or having promiscuous sex, oftentimes with prostitutes. So why are we giving this to a day one old baby is questionable to begin with. It also has an aluminum load that is gigantic and far above anything that's ever been approved by the FDA. And aluminum is one of the elements in vaccines that is really coming under scrutiny in studies all around the world. But the hepatitis B vaccine we're giving that day one old baby, there's two versions of it, Merck and GlaxoSmithKline. One went through a safety study in trials for 4 days, and the other one for 5 days. That's why I said days, not 5 years, not 5 months, not 5 weeks, 5 days. So essentially, if a child dies 6 days after a hepatitis B vaccine, then you aren't going, it didn't, the vaccine didn't cause it. If they develop, you know, a neurological disorder 3 weeks later, it wasn't caused by the vaccine because our trial ended after 5 days. If they develop autism in 2 or 3 years, we will be able to say it wasn't the hepatitis B vaccine because our trial that lasted 5 days didn't see any incidents of autism, even though everyone knows it takes years for autism to present. So this is the problem. And when you look at the childhood vaccine program, the longest trials you can find are 6 months long, and very few even get that amount of time. And none of them are tested against a saline placebo group, so that, for instance, when we see severe adverse events being reported in the HPV Gardasil trials, you would say, well, what about the saline group? Did the saline group have 2.3% autoimmune and severe side effects? But we don't have a saline group to compare it to. Instead, they compared it to a group that received nothing but the aluminum from the vaccine. I mean, this is a crazy trial that we said they're safe because we extracted the aluminum content of the vaccine, a known neurotoxin that is responsible for killing fish in acid rain, killing trees in the land, killing animals. We inject this into our children, and we're going to use that as the placebo comparator. So, of course, when you look at the trials for AIDS, they have 2.3% of the girls within 6 months developed a severe allergic reaction, autoimmune disease, many of them, and so did the placebo group that received only the aluminum. Well, if the aluminum is the element in the vaccine causing autoimmune disease, then how are we going to find that? But instead, they say, see, the vaccine is safe, because when we tested against only aluminum, everybody had the same amount of autoimmune disease. And I'll make there's a caveat to the HPV story. There was a tiny group of about 400 girls that did receive a relatively inert substance, the carrier solution, that didn't have aluminum or the antigens. It had some chemicals, but very light. That group that received that never appeared in any of the information that approved the vaccine. We had to hunt for it. It took months. We finally found it. Well, guess what? Their severe autoimmune reactions was 0%. So that means there was a 230% increase in severe allergic reactions, autoimmune reactions, adverse events, and the vaccine got approved because they never compared it to that saline group. And that's why we want saline groups.
We're talking with Del Bigtree from the Informed Consent Action Network. He writes about vaccine safety issues. You can't set aside the whole issue of vaccine safety, but do you believe in the concept of vaccination as a way to keep children and people safe from a virus or something like that that can hurt them?
I believe that vaccines, for the most part, are probably effective. And I think it is a very noble effort to create a product that could keep you from having infections in very rare cases where some people might die. But I don't believe you can take safety out of the discussion, because if you have protected a child from chickenpox, a disease that, you know, nobody really, I mean, so rare is death in chickenpox, but you've increased the risk of shingles for the entire country, which virtually every scientific study looks at it, the shingles epidemic is being caused by the chickenpox vaccine, and people do die of the shingles, then I think you have to question whether you should continue fighting shingles. I mean, fighting the chickenpox. And the reason we are seeing an increase in shingles is because that's technically the chickenpox virus in your body. But when our children were getting the chickenpox, we were around our children. And so your body naturally got a reboost, a booster shot, essentially, by nature that kept you from getting shingles. But now that none of us are walking around children who get chickenpox, we're all having to get shots for shingles, and shingles is running rampant. And so you have to have those discussions. Is it an effective vaccine if it's causing some other disease that's actually more dangerous? So, yes, I believe measles vaccine, for the most part, for a short-lived period of time, will protect you from getting the measles. But it will not give you lifelong immunity, and that becomes problematic. How many vaccines is it safe to give? We're currently giving two MMR vaccines in childhood. They're talking about a third at college, and there's two more that are in the adult schedule. And they're increasing because it's proving that these vaccines are wearing off much faster than anyone said. Meanwhile, everybody in a measles outbreak right now, and there are no deaths, even though we want to call it deadly, in all the outbreaks since, I think, roughly 2005, there are no reported deaths yet. And all of those people will go on to have lifelong immunity, a benefit they can march anywhere in the world and never worry about measles. They have what I call the Ferrari of immunity, where those of us who are getting an MMR vaccine are getting the Pinto of immunity. And we're going to have to keep going back to the shop and keep re-upping on this vaccine because it's just not as effective as nature is itself.
All right.
So these are the things that we have to discuss.
So we're 20 minutes in. I just wanted to finish with one more point you make in your letter, and that is that vaccine manufacturers have no incentive to worry about the safety of the vaccine because they're covered for liability by the federal government. Can you expound on that point?
That's right. We took liability away from the pharmaceutical industry. And I want you to think about that in terms of what we think of pharma. Every week, there's a new commercial by a lawyer saying, if this drug has injured you, we have a class action lawsuit. And we've watched gigantic cases. The most recent, Johnson & Johnson, finally lost. And it proves that they knew that talcum powder had asbestos in it for 50 years. And so people have been getting cancer. We've been sprinkling it on our babies. The CDC and FDA said it was safe the whole time. Now we know that that was a lie. We had Fen-Phen, and people died of Fen-Phen, and Vioxx. Over 100,000 people died from heart attacks on the drug that when we took them to court and got their internal memos and their internal trials, we found that they always knew it caused heart attacks. That's why you need to be able to sue. It's the only way to get into the internal documents to find out they knew they were lying to us all along. We know this industry lies to us, but they have one product that they are totally immune from liability that you can never sue them on, and that's vaccines, the one product we give our healthy babies. Now, we took liability away in 1986 with what was called the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act. What happened was there were so many lawsuits in court that the industry making vaccines says, we can't make money on this. We can't make money on this product. So we are basically going to stop making vaccines if you don't protect us from liability. It was essentially a blackmail against our government. Ronald Reagan hated the idea, but there was enough pharma lobbying on it that they passed this act, which took all liability away from the vaccine makers, all liability away from the doctors, the hospitals, the Walgreens, wherever you get it. Everyone's indemnified. So what happened? The vaccine program exploded. It went from 10 vaccines to 72 vaccines. And now nobody, we've already said no one ever has done a placebo-based study. Well, now you don't even have to, because if the vaccine's injuring somebody, you can't sue them. And so we've taken away the greatest market force a free society has to make sure that a product is of a high standard and is constantly evolving and being made better. And so I think that that's very, very dangerous. And when we look at the conflicts of interest that that has created, taking liability away, are massive, because now our government and our health agencies are literally hanging in the harm's way. What we did was we transferred liability over to Health and Human Services. So now if you get injured by a vaccine, you have to sue the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Health and Human Services, by the way, oversees the CDC, the FDA, HRSA, and NIH. So Health and Human Services is responsible for doing the science to see if vaccines are safe. All of our safety studies are done by Health and Human Services. So think about this. I am suing Health and Human Services, and it's incumbent upon me to prove causation based on existing science. And that science has to have been done by who? Health and Human Services, the very defendant in this case. And so Health and Human Services, we've proved in that 88-page document you're pointing out, is doing no science investigating the safety of vaccines, because if they did, it would be used against them in court and they would lose based on their own science. This is like a murder case where the murderer is the one doing all of the forensics for the case. It's insane. And then it goes worse, that the CDC is responsible to promote vaccines. They buy $5 billion worth of vaccines every year and distribute them across America. So they're a marketing arm for the vaccine industry. And then we tell them, you're the ones that should do the safety studies, which is at the heart of what got me in this whole thing, Vax, the movie I made. We have a whistleblower at the CDC named Dr. William Thompson that says, we tested the MMR vaccine in a demographic study of 3,000 children, and we saw a causal relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism, a 3.56 increased risk of autism based on those African-American boys specifically in the study who got the vaccine when the CDC said they should. And he said that my colleagues and I sat around and we were perplexed. Our number one priority was to promote vaccine uptake in America, but here we had a study that was showing that one of the vaccines could potentially be dangerous, and it was decided that we would hide that information from the public because it would go against our primary job, which is to promote vaccines and make people believe in vaccines. We've got to end this conflict of interest, and Bobby Kennedy and I are meeting with politicians to do it very simply. Let's create a national vaccine safety board that's not inside of the health agency, that is defending the product in court and promoting it across America. Let's have an independent group of scientists that are paid very well, that are not allowed to have been working for the pharmaceutical industry for years before, and are not allowed to go and work for the pharmaceutical industry for 5 to 10 years afterwards, so that there's no incentive to be manipulated by the industry. And then let's do real safety studies in there. Let's let real science take place with real skepticism, instead of a bias that's being all of our safety studies. Is what exist of them are being done by the manufacturers themselves. And so these are the issues we have. We took liability away. I think if you want, you know, to have people like Bobby Kennedy and I stop talking about the issues, which is what I'm sure your other guests are going to say, you shouldn't listen to Del Bigtree, you shouldn't listen to Bobby Kennedy. Well, then do this. Let's put this back into the marketplace the way America works. If vaccine injury is really only one in a million, then I think the pharmaceutical industry can afford that lawsuit from one in a million. Put liability back on the industry. And let's take vaccine safety out of the group that is way too conflicted to handle, has too many conflicts to handle it. Let's create a national vaccine safety board. If you did those two things, this thing could right itself, and you would have more people vaccinating because they could trust the vaccine program. Instead of a cover-up by government agencies, a whistleblower at the CDC that's still working at the CDC that no one will interview and the Congress will not call forward, they will not call forward the five scientists involved in what he's claiming a fraud, they will not read through the 10,000 documents of that study that Dr. William Thompson's provided. Additionally, Dr. Andrew Zimmerman is now one of the biggest stories in this, because in that vaccine court system where Health and Human Services is a defendant, Dr. Andrew Zimmerman from Kennedy Krieger Institute is the top neurologist in the world and one of the world's leading specialists on autism. He was the one that was fighting parents saying there's no mechanism by which a vaccine can cause autism. He was working for the government. That was all great until he came upon the case of Hannah Poehling that was in the vaccine court system. And in that, the reason he was so close to it was John Poehling was his colleague, another neurologist. And they watched this little girl regress into autism the way all the parents had said. And so Dr. Zimmerman and a staff of the top scientists investigated it and found the mechanism. And he went to the Department of Justice and said, I have now found the mechanism by which a vaccine causes autism. And it's if the child has an underlying mitochondrial disorder. And so in this case that's in vaccine court right now, my judgment is it was caused by the vaccine. Well, guess what? Department of Justice fired him that next morning. He was never asked to come back into the court again, and they took that case and settled it off to the side so that no one knew what happened with it. But even worse, the Department of Justice went on to fight other cases of parents claiming the autism was caused by a vaccine, and they, in their reports and in the courtrooms, would say, Dr. Andrew Zimmerman is the leading authority on autism, and he has said unequivocally there is no mechanism by which a vaccine can cause autism. Well, now Dr. Andrew Zimmerman has signed an affidavit. He is going up against the Department of Justice saying they have committed fraud by using his earlier statement instead of his more knowledgeable and educated statement that he had changed. So this science is crumbling down around our health departments. And of course, you have the media being pulled into this. Everyone's saying, don't listen to these people. They're crazy. They're whack nuts. Well, we're winning lawsuits, and Andrew Zimmerman is going to be a big part of future lawsuits, because now we know that multiple whistleblowers are showing us that vaccines can and do cause autism in some children.
Okay, we're about a half hour in. Were there any points that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to make before we finish?
You know, there are so many issues to this. I think I'm one of the few journalists that has investigated this subject only, vaccine safety, for over 3 years. And I spent a year before that just looking at the MMR vaccine and the fraud with Dr. William Thompson. But what I want to say is we have been taught in every science class, at least the ones that I grew up in, that there is no such thing as settled science. We know that science always advances, usually because one person or one team discovers something that goes against the status quo. So when we hear that all the science says that vaccines are safe, that actually doesn't mean anything in science. It is possible for the science to be wrong, especially when the body of science is being done by a handful of health agencies that I believe have been taken over by the industries we're supposed to be being protected from. So, but at the very basis of science is the same foundation that we practice in journalism. And that is that you are always supposed to ask the hard questions. You are never supposed to be afraid to have the debate, no matter how uncomfortable that debate may be. You are always supposed to ask the hardest questions of industry as journalists, of your government as journalists, of your health agency as journalists. Nothing is supposed to make you run from those questions. And the same is true about science. Good science should invite skepticism. Good science should be being done by skeptics that challenge their own theories. So when we see doctors and scientists telling us that the science is settled when it comes to vaccines, that anybody that's questioning it is crazy, you should have a red flag go off right there. Add to that that they're talking about a product that never tested against a placebo, and it becomes more problematic. Add to that that it's the only product that an industry that lies all the time has no liability for, and the problem gets deeper. And then add to that that it's the only product being essentially forced upon us using coercion by our government, that we cannot go to schools unless we buy this product, and you've taken away every single market force and protection to ensure that these products will be made at the highest levels and will be safe. It is time for all of America to demand this debate happen in public. Stop the name calling. We're not calling. I believe these are noble people that believe in the vaccine program that are creating vaccines. But I also work with with noble scientists and scholars all around the world who also are trying to make sure children are safe. These people need to come together in public and have this debate, not name-calling, not calling them anti-vaxxers, because their science is showing us that aluminum, for instance, is causing neurological issues and autism-like behaviors in mouse studies. Not because we're seeing the aluminum you said left the body is actually being found in the brains and kidneys of monkeys when we can dissect them. The science all around the world is actually showing that vaccines are not as safe as we've been told. And I would say this, if you were going to say that the science is settled, what you are saying is we are the only scientific body in the world that believes our science is so immaculate it cannot be questioned. That should have a very low bar to begin the questioning. If you're saying it's immaculate, then I think I've shown you enough reasons that show that it clearly is not an immaculate science and actually should be up for debate. No matter who's hanging in the balance, we should not be afraid of something, especially when we have 54% of our children with chronic illness. One in four children are going to be on a drug they'll be on the rest of their lives leaving elementary school. We have more babies dying in America on the first day of life than every other industrialized nation combined. We have more babies dying in the first year of life in America than the 20 other richest nations. And it was reported recently, I think by CBS, that you're 70% more likely to die before reaching the age of 18 in America than the 20 other richest nations in the world. When our medical establishment is failing that bad, I don't believe they deserve a free ride, and they certainly aren't the ones that should be allowed to say our science is settled.
Del Bigtree is the founder and CEO of the Informed Consent Action Network. You're listening to the Inland Journal podcast. In part two of this program, we'll hear from someone who believes vaccinations are safe and the system of testing and evaluating them works.